It's to the best of our knowledge. This hour, you're listening to an abridged version of a live show that we put on a few weeks ago in Salt Lake City. The theme, Living Dangerously. And up next, Charles Monroe Kane.
Now, our next guest has one of the greatest nicknames you've ever heard, especially for a scientist. She is dubbed the Queen of Canopy Research. Her name is Nalini Nadkarni. And what is Nalini's philosophy? Well, I've been reading a lot about her, and I've come up with one thing. She wants to bring together two groups, the trees and the general public. She does this by collaborating with dancers, rappers, artists, prisoners, fashion designers, and more. Please, please help me welcome Nalini Nadkarni. Thank you. How are you?
I'm great.
Excellent. Now, you've been doing this your whole life, but you fell recently out of a tree. Can you tell us about that? What happened?
Yes, I did fall. And I want to add that that this was the first fall in 36 years of professional climbing. And it was not the fault of the tree. The rope failed. So the trees did not betray me. It was a matter of the rope failing. I fell 50 feet, which is very far.
Yes.
I was in the,
let's reiterate like that. 50 feet is very far.
Yeah, it's like a five-story building. And I fell straight through like a sack of sand. You know, I didn't hit the branches and break my fall. So I ended up on the forest floor. I had some graduate students with me, and they took great care of me. I ended up being helicoptered out after spending about 2.5 hours stretched out on the ground.
Where were you?
This was in the Olympic National Park along the north shore of the Quinault River. So I had some time to think about trees and think about my life, think about what mattered to me, because I really thought, you know, as I sort of felt weaker and weaker, and my blood was sort of streaming out of my spleen and so forth, that this could be it.
Yeah.
This could be it. As it turned out, it was not it. I got to the hospital. I got great medical care. I had 9 broken ribs, a broken fibula, broken pelvis. I lost my spleen. I broke 5 vertebrae, and I cracked my cervical vertebrae number 2. So I had I was in the hospital for quite a while. But it was really, and so that, then you think, well, maybe this is what living dangerously is like.
Yeah, I would say, yeah.
But actually, I have to say, first of all, I think that we all live dangerously to some extent. You know, I was actually 2 months before this fall, I was walking out of our kitchen in my shoes to feed the chickens, and I fell on my face, and I broke my kneecap. And so, you know, that wasn't seemingly living dangerously, but it turned out there was a sort of a consequence.
We do have a slide, at least, of you leaving the hospital after, I think, can we see that now? How long had you been in the hospital at this point?
It was about 2 weeks, and then I spent time up in Olympia going to doctors, and then I came back here to Salt Lake City, and now it's been about 3 months, a little over 3 months, and I have to say I learned so much. I mean, we talk about the consequences of living in a risky way.
Sure. But have you been back up in a tree? Have you been doing exercise?
I haven't
exercise?
Yet been back up. I can't quite do that yet with this spinal fusion I have. But I have to say that, you know, really with the concern and the love of my family, my kids and my husband, who are just fantastic, and my friends, my colleagues, I really believe that in addition to the medical help I got, it was really, I think that the counterpoint to risk is love, is what I really learned. I know that sounds woo-woo and crazy, and coming from a scientist, you know, I hope none of my colleagues is in the audience, but I do believe that
the
it
woo-woo
was
the comment that, will be stricken from this
thank
for
you
all
very
scientists.
Much. But what I feel now is that I'm on my way to recovery. One of the things I learned, I think one of the gifts of taking the risk of having the consequence of a fall like that, is that you really learn about yourself. Mm. Because I couldn't go back to work. I couldn't sort of keep going in the rat race that I was on in terms of more papers, more proposals, more students. I had to be quiet, literally. I had to be peaceful.
Now, one thing that you do that I really like is that you do the interdisciplinary thing, that you're connecting with people, but some of it informs your science. I want to show another slide here. And what's interesting about this slide, well, actually, can you tell us what that is? Because this is phenomenal to me.
Yes. So one of the things that has always bothered me about nature documentaries and people who document nature is that they almost always choose to focus on animals. They believe that animals are unique in the fact that they behave, they're mobile, they have sex, they do predation, and therefore they're very interesting, cheetahs and elephants and so forth. And they ignore trees because they think trees are boring, stable, static things that are stuck in the ground, that don't behave, that don't have sex, that can't communicate. And this really bugs me because trees are so fascinating. And if you ever sit up in a tree for any length of time on even a slightly windy day, what you see is that at the twig level, at the small branches and the foliage, the leaves, they're moving like crazy. And so I decided to explore this in order to sort of explode the myth that trees are static organisms. So I tied little paintbrushes with green paint on the ends of the twigs,
yes,
held up a canvas, and allowed the tree to become the artist. And so this is 2 minutes of a Douglas fir in a moderate wind that has just painted this kind of Chinese-y picture that I think is so attractive. But the other thing I did was I measured the length of all the segments that tree had produced after 2 minutes, and I multiplied that number, the number of centimeters of segments of collectively, I multiplied by the number of twigs per branch, the number of branches per tree, the number of minutes per hour, and hours per day, and days per year. And I came up with an estimate of how far a single tree, a Douglas fir, travels in a single year.
How far does a Douglas fir travel?
What do you think?
Say far, I think.
186,760 miles.
Boom.
So that's 7 times around the Earth.
Now, the thing this idea of something being active, dynamic, that people think isn't, you take it even further. You got that theory, this idea from the trees, and you said to yourself, well, what other things in society that people say are stuck but aren't stuck? And you started working with prisoners.
Right. There's a huge population, in fact, 2.3 million people who are incarcerated in our country. 1 out of 100 people are seemingly stuck. They have behavior patterns, they have lifestyle patterns that many people deem them to be unchangeable, something to throw away. And so one of the things that I and my colleagues and my students have been doing in the last 10 years is to work with prisoners, to bring science and nature to incarcerated men and women in state prisons and county jails. We've started with a science lecture series that moved into engaging with conservation groups to have them teach the inmates how to rear endangered species like the Oregon spotted frog, the Taylor checker spot butterfly, 17 species of endangered prairie plants. And here in Utah, we've started a program with the Salt Lake County Jail and the Draper State Prison where we're helping the Division of Wildlife Resources to restore populations of the least chub. And so inmates who seemingly might be static, mm-hmm, are in fact participating in what I think is one of the most important things we can do, which is to restore the earth.
Now, metaphorically, there's another entity in our society that's stuck that I think a lot of people would, especially in this crowd, would probably really dislike. Maybe we should bring her up here for a second. We can talk about her. Barbie. Now, this isn't any regular Barbie. Her name is
Treetop Barbie.
Treetop. Tell us about Treetop Barbie.
Yes. Well, I have a daughter named Erica, and, you know, sort of to my horror, she wanted a Barbie doll when she was, as most girls do, when they're 6 or 7 years old. And so I decided to sort of counter that, trying to find an alternative to the floofy doll, you know, Barbie that reinforces these sort of negative images of women, and thought, well, why not, again, push the barriers to join together the ecological values of trees with the recreational values of Barbie. So it started as a joke in my lab. You know, we just sort of said, wouldn't that be funny if we had a treetop Barbie? But in fact, we began actually engaging tailors to make her clothes.
Yes.
We made a little booklet talking about the values of forest canopies and really trying to be a role model for girls who wanted Barbies. It was picked up by the Science Times, actually, in the New York Times. And after that, we just began getting all these orders in. We did get a call from Mattel.
Uh-oh.
And they said, you can't do this. And I said, well, we're not making any money. This
Mattel seems like they'd be big supporters of canopy research. Am I wrong?
Yeah, you would think.
You think, yeah,
right.
Yeah.
But they said, no, you really can't do this. And I said, well, we'll give you the idea. We're getting lots of orders. Surely this would be a great thing for you. But again, they said, no, shut you down. And I said, well, you know, I've come to know a number of journalists in my town, at the Olympian, at
yeah,
KUER.
Don't mess with journalists.
You know, I think they might be interested in a story of how Mattel is trying to shut down a brown woman who's a scientist to try to inspire other scientists.
Mm-hmm. You stopped the cease and desist.
They said, we'll give you the okay over the phone.
No.
Go right ahead.
Well, I want to thank you very much. I was very inspired by the way you connect with things.
Thanks.
So thank you very much.
That's tree canopy researcher Nalini Nadkarni talking with Charles Monroe Kane. They were in front of a live audience in Salt Lake City. Special thanks, by the way, to KUER for bringing us out there.